This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 632, Cherry. There's really not a way to mispronounce this one. Sorry.
Can't really mess that up.
Well, the cherry? Here's how you can mess it up. Make this movie.
Yeah.
Oof.
I don't disagree.
Oh.
What a shit burger.
Talk about messing up.
Yeah.
Swing and a miss.
Oh, my God. So
I told you guys. Yeah, I told you when we were picking movies. I'm like, we need to talk. Because I watched this a month ago. And like, I've been holding on to it. And I'm like, this
and
is
you thought
movie
we had to suffer too?
No. But it's like coming off the biggest movie of all time.
Not
and
anymore.
Russos decide to say,
not anymore.
Yeah, let's make this.
Avatar beat it by like $1,000.
It's their like, oh, let's show we can do different things. Like,
yes.
Suck. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, watch
oh,
this
so they're normal filmmakers like everybody else.
Yeah, totally. It's like I watched this movie and it was like okay, yeah, this is from the people who made You, Me, and Dupree. That makes sense.
Right, right. They were trying to get away from that when they went right. to the MCU. Now,
yeah, they did when they were at the MCU.
Oh, man.
Maybe they should just tie their entire career to Kevin Feige and hold on for dear life.
Yes, and Community. If they make a Community movie, they're allowed to go back and do
that's
that.
That's fair. That's fair.
So.
And Arrested Development, too, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. They worked on that, too.
Oh,
yeah.
Were they?
Yeah.
That's why the ladder
stair
truck.
Oh.
Yeah.
So let's go around the virtual table, and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And before we get into the movie proper, shameless plugs, don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you find them. Be sure and follow us. Apple, now, in case you didn't know, wants you to say follow instead of subscribe.
Oh, okay.
Well, and apparently Apple's making movies, too, so. Yeah.
Well, they made this. Speaking.
Are they?
Yeah. So
I mean, they well, are. You're right. It was a movie. Yes.
Here's my theory, though, on why they're changing that, is because they're okay. going to come up with podcasts that you can subscribe, i.e. pay for, and they don't want people to say subscribe anymore. They want people to say follow. So you can follow us wherever you get your podcast from. Other places say follow anyway. I just thought that was an interesting little tweak to the verbiage that they've rolled out. So also, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. And the group is called the League of Show Sharers. And people who were kind enough to share the show this week: Heather Sachs, Pat, Andy, Julianne, Jordan, Travis Tewitt, Chris Williams, Gabriel Lugo, Chris Sanders, Ralph Tribble, Chris Magic Man, Ron Johnson, Tammy Sherman Powers, Aaron Marlowe, Chris Falls, Minorities Report, We Have a Hulk Podcast, Brad Hyen, Mike and Oscar, Sarah Clements, Invasion of the Remake, Ryan Terry from the Forza Crowd Podcast, Geek to Me Radio, Binge Movies, Matt Naglia, Feel and Film, Ronnie Castle, Chris Wilson, and In Session Film. So thank you very much for sharing an episode. It helps us a lot. It's why we encourage you to do it. And here's a new way to encourage you to do it. What if there was a prize for it? What?
Oh, I'd be in.
Well, no, you can't. You work.
Oh, I thought every time you get my hopes up.
Yeah. So we've got some copies of Promising Young Woman to give away. I would think Erin Marlowe is very, very excited about this, but she probably already owns it, so she has
I was going to say, by the time this comes out, it had just came out this week. I'm pretty sure she has it.
So it's out on Blu-ray, and so you can pick yours up wherever you get your Blu-rays, or you can win one from us by sharing an episode. We will take our winner. I don't know. How many do we got to give away?
We have like five.
Okay. Kevin's debating on how many do we, he's like,
I mean,
well, I keep
we got
one.
Six,
how
but I want one for myself.
So, we will draw our winners from the people who share this week's episode of the movie. Unfortunately, the movie is Cherry, but that's, you know, you deal with the hand you got.
Well, so. We're not giving them a copy of Cherry. Like, so
no, you know. But you still got to show your friends. Like,
that is also fair.
Here's this really lousy movie.
This is our discussion about Cherry. We're not. They're not sharing Cherry. They're sharing us. You know. Well, we'll get into that.
Totally. So you should position it as here they are talking about a really bad movie, but I'm trying to win a good movie,
a really good movie.
It's so, like they balance out. The universe is evened out by this whole exchange.
Perhaps so.
Perfectly balanced in every way.
Yeah.
So
well done.
Promising Young Woman is now yours to own on digital Blu-ray and DVD. Dive deeper into the critically acclaimed and wildly entertaining Promising Young Woman, starring Academy Award nominee Carey Mulligan. Don't miss the Rotten Tomatoes certified fresh film that critics are calling a game-changing masterpiece and one of the best films of the year, now with exclusive bonus content that takes you behind the scenes of the edge of your seat story with the cast and writer-director Emerald Fennell. Bring home the film everyone is talking about today on digital, Blu-ray, and DVD if you really kick it old school.
So how do I win?
By sharing this week's episode on Facebook or Twitter.
Excellent.
Ta-da. So there's that was a really shameless plug. Also, don't forget, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content, and you help us out, and that is greatly appreciated. So,
and more important than ever, the Patreon. And I want to say, of course, as we always do, we really appreciate everyone that since we've started a couple of years has chipped into the Patreon. It's a huge help, especially when we've needed to buy equipment and replace things that break. But also, we now have an editor, The Vern from Cinema Recall. He's taken a load off of me because it's, you know, I've got a lot going on with the baby and work and everything. And getting the episodes out on time is super important to us. So you're still seeing the episodes every week as they regularly are released on Thursdays, but we need an editor to do that, and what we're paying is more than we make on the Patreon right now, and we don't have a whole lot of other sources of income. So as our funds deplete, and you know, it's they're gonna get lower and lower and lower, and eventually if we run out of money for editors, then it's going to be like, well, hopefully we can get it out this week. So I'm not trying to like put the doom and gloom on, but that's the reality of the situation, is that, you know, in a few months at the rate that we're spending on editing versus our funds, we could be completely out of money. And then it's just like, I hope, you know, hopefully we can stay consistent. So if you guys can spare $5 a month, and I know we say it every week, but seriously, it's more of a like, this could really help the stability. You know, if you appreciate the 600 plus episodes we've done and all the work and time that goes into it, if you can spare $5 a month, and if we got, you know, a handful of listeners to do that, we could at least break even every month on the editing and, you know, and keep the show going on a consistent basis. Like really, you know, and I know it's a hard time for everyone, but if you can do it, it means a tremendous amount to us.
I will also say Brad Hyen got his comic books. If you bump, instead of the $5, if you bump to the $7, I will send you two comic books from my collection. They will not be bagged and boarded. They will be in an envelope. Trust me, they're nothing special, but they're coming directly from me. I'll write a nice little message on the envelope. Alex Carlo, who also donated, is in the UK, so hopefully those will be there at some point. I don't know when, but those are out as well. But Brad's actually got returned to sender, so I had to drive them over to his house.
You're like,
so
I'm
that's
not
what I did.
Postage again.
Yes,
on these.
I walked them to his front door and I left them there.
But, and you know, when we say like $5 is the entry tier, I mean, yeah. if you can spare 10, if you can, I mean, we're not trying to be greedy, but it's just whatever you can spare a month, whatever is lowest.
If we can get one person to give us $1 million a month.
Yeah, if you could find.
If we can get an eccentric billionaire.
We will never do another episode. We'll just split the million.
But anyway, it means a lot. And so whatever you guys can spare. But seriously, if you've never contemplated, if you listen to the episode every week and you're like, yeah, cool. And you just kind of tune out because we say Patreon every week, we say it for a reason, and again, it's been extremely helpful up until this point. We've used it for equipment and stuff, but now we do have, you know, we have to hire an editor every single week, and I just noticed that, you know, we make about half a month, just, you know, to put it out in general terms, we pay double what we make a month, so that can't last forever, and we just want to make sure that we can keep delivering content.
We're not
so
the federal government.
No, right? We can't. Unfortunately, we can't just print money, and we also can't just make people do things. Well, I guess we could probably make Joe learn how to edit, I guess, if we had to, but we don't want it to come to that.
No, nobody does.
Keep
screw it up.
Do you know how many chicken noises probably won't be in the show at that
right.
point?
Zero.
So
unedited baby.
So anyway, so if you could help out, that would be greatly appreciated, and I guess let's dig into the movie.
God damn it.
So this movie is, what, 2.5 hours?
Which I feel like I'm still watching it.
There's no... Okay. There are moments and there are films and movies that deserve... That need to be 2.5 hours, right? Avengers Endgame.
Of course.
I get it.
Yeah.
The Godfather. I get it. Titanic. Well, fine. Whatever.
But you're right. But
there's
movie,
no reason. There's no reason this movie needs to be that long.
But I was thinking of some of those movies when I was looking at the runtime and after watching the movie. They want it to be Goodfellas. They want it to be God. They want this to be an epic saga.
Oh, you're saying they want Cherry to be one of in the.
I think that's what they thought they were doing. Yeah.
The reason it's 2.5 hours is because the Russos thought they were doing. I mean, and not to say the subject matter or the point they were trying to make isn't important, but they thought they were doing it. And we went on an epic journey that took the runtime of an entire movie to get to the point of what they were trying to say. They're like, hey, I'm Robin Banks. Oh, let's go all the way back to high school, and then an hour and a half later it's like, oh hey, let's rob some banks. And they thought they were doing this epic build-up, like a Goodfellas type, here's how we got here type thing, you know.
Here's the other thing about Goodfellas and all those the flicks we just talked about is you're not well, you are rooting for Henry Hill, right?
At like the beginning you kind of are, because it's this insulated world where it kind of feels, I mean, this is the game like mafia movies always play, right? Where it's like, as long as they're only hurting other mafia people, which you know isn't true, but it's what they're it's all they're showing you.
Right.
But you don't feel as bad. Now it's just a game everybody opted in on, and so if you get burned, that's on you.
Yeah,
that's the reason why Pain and Gain doesn't work for me, at least.
Right, it works. I think the first 2/3 of it works, and then they bring in innocent people, and it didn't shift tones like it needed to.
And it's a real story. Now, if they brought in just innocent characters, yeah, that would suck, but it wouldn't be as bad. But when you try to make light of and make a comedy about real people that these people kidnapped and killed, like, I can't be entertained by that. That's not fun.
No, it's weird because, but yes, to your point, it's like Tom Holland in this movie is a garbage person. He's a garbage person.
I don't know.
He brings everybody that it comes into contact with him down or dead,
but he's also struggling with addiction. Like, I don't think it's hard when you're doing a movie about people that have issues, right? If there's, you know, and a lot of people are affected by mental health, you know, whether it be anxiety, whether it be depression, whether it be addiction, whether, you know, and I mean, you know, all that stuff. So it's hard to say, because yes, I mean, yeah, the character does some unlikable things, but I think a lot of that is caused by his struggles and his issues he's going for. Like, he's not a serial killer, you know what I mean? It's not that kind of a,
that's,
you know,
true,
whatever, right? I mean, he's kind of a victim.
Well, the movie definitely wants you to sympathize with him. I mean,
right,
by the way they set it up, right? Like, it's like, oh well, the banks were screwing him on overdraft fees, and all the banks he walks into have fake names like Bank and Bank
America. I did kind of like that. Like, if you look at every, like, it's Sergeant So and So or like
Doctor
all
whomever.
Of the name all of the names are every, like, nothing. There are some good things here. Like, they're trying some stuff, which I appreciate, but it just does not, it falls
flat.
Well,
yeah, let's talk about that. So I like movies that are different and stylistic, you know, and really unique and trying new things. And so, but for me, all those things did not work in this movie.
Yeah,
like,
same.
I think the Russos wanted to, after Endgame, they did their big $2+ billion, you know, biggest movie of all time, asterisk, whatever, you know, it's going to go back and forth forever. But they did this thing and they want to prove, oh yeah, but we can make a really important art house movie and we can have all these visual flashes. Like, this movie is so bloated and full mm-hmm. of itself and patting itself on the back for how clever it is with rectal camera shots and
that was
all
so dumb
and all the signs and stuff.
Yeah,
but
I didn't even realize what we were doing until I was like, oh, we're in his butt.
Right,
cool.
But like,
right.
If it hadn't been so indulgent, it's so self-indulgent with the things they tried to do. And I mean,
when they had that camera up his, I thought the film was going to see itself.
Yeah. So that's true. So I mean, the choices they made to be so hyper-stylistic, like, and they were kind of trying to do it. Didn't The Big Short do stuff like that? Isn't this kind of a clever, like a, you know, like Adam McKay can do like a comedy
yeah.
about a true story, but inject little funny things to make it like, you know, entertaining.
Yeah, he
but
did,
also,
and he did it in the Dick Cheney movie.
Right, Vice.
Oh,
had
similar,
sure.
Had a similar vibe. But see, there, he's doing that. And I think it worked better in The Big Short than it did in the Dick Cheney movie, even though I like them both. I like The Big Short better. But he uses it in a way which is like he's taking incredibly dry material
mm-hmm.
and he's using that to try and get you to like, hey, pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna explain subprime mortgages to you and you're glazing over but just because I just said subprime mortgages. So like I like hang on. I'm going to make it fun or I'm going to make it funny or quirky. Like there's a purpose behind the stylization.
It's effective. It's very
effective. And like this just seemed like I like when movies do that too, but like, I don't know. It's self-indulgent.
It
never felt worth it or earned
it
or,
didn't,
or,
yeah.
or having served a purpose. Cause it's like another movie that's hyper stylized and right out of the gate, but it works from the jump is Booksmart, and I know it's a wildly
sure.
different story.
Yeah.
But that movie is so stylized, and I loved every frame of it. It was probably my favorite movie that year.
Booksmart, Zombieland, Scott Pilgrim, you know,
Drive.
Movies that are extremely
yeah.
Drive. I think Drive is very stylized.
Yeah, but
maybe
I
only
feel like
God
that's more of an
80s
vibe thing to it. Not
no,
as,
that's fair.
You know what I mean? Like,
God
stylized
is
like, you know,
stylized.
Graphics on the screen and changing things and like really like, you know. But like there are movies that do it really well. But you're right, Tom. This one didn't serve a purpose. I mean, it was there, but they don't highlight it enough. It's not, it's like peripheral stuff and it's not
yeah.
making a point of the story they're trying to tell. Like the story they're trying to tell here is drug addiction. It's the opioid crisis, but
yeah.
it takes a really, really long time to get there. And then
yeah.
when they get there and they never really focus on why he has these issues. Like, you know, the government isn't paying enough attention to veterans. There's not enough help in the medical, you know, there's not enough medical support and healthcare and stuff, but like, it's never really the focus. Like you could miss what point they're trying to make because they never can focus long
well,
enough.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He's got all of these different issues, right? So he's just to break it down real fast. He meets this girl in college. They end up getting married. He meets her in high school,
I think, doesn't he? Or is she
I took it. He's a freshman in college.
He's a freshman in college. They get together.
Yeah.
She's damaged as well, but in like a kind of a crappy upbringing. She tells him she's going to Toronto. They break up. He feels directionless. He being Tom Holland feels directionless. So he joins the military. She comes back, says I was kind of making it up because I have these strong feelings for you. He's like, well, I got bad news.
And I don't
I'm
think
going
she was
to
making
the-
it up. I think she was going to do it because she realized that he was kind of keep like pulling her back. Not a bad person, but like
he kept holding on.
She wanted to go. She has a career in mind. Like a lot of people get wrapped up in a relationship and they don't go to college or don't do the things they want to do, right? And like if they did that stuff first, then they can worry about the relationship and the whole rest of their life and be more financially secure, blah, blah, blah. She was worried that she would be stuck in this small Ohio town for the rest of her life, and she had aspirations of going to college and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. So she says, I'm going to do this, and she was going to do it, and then she realized at the last minute, like, I can't. I love this guy. But by then, it's too late. And
oh,
like,
see, I took it as she saw her parents' marriage fall apart, so she doesn't believe in love. He says, "I love you," and she freaks out. And she's like, "I'm leaving." I can't, because remember, like, he says,
I think,
love you.
I think you guys are really on the same page. It's just you said that she made up going to Toronto, and yeah. Kevin's saying that she was really going to go.
Oh, I see.
That wasn't fictionalized.
Yeah,
like,
that's
that
all
she
I'm
wasn't
saying.
Lying.
Yeah, she was
like, but yes,
she saw a reason. She saw a way to get out.
She was overwhelmed by his affection for her.
The old thank you was like, ooh.
Yes.
So he joins the military. He becomes a medic. He sees some,
but this whole thing we've seen Full Metal Jacket. We don't need to see you going through a half hour or 45 minutes of training to be in the military. Cut
and I think
that
the other problem, the other problem is because we've seen Full Metal Jacket and movies like that. Like, I'm not saying that the military isn't tough. I couldn't do it.
Oh,
right?
It would suck. Yeah,
but it's like. I'm like, is it really like this now? I mean, I know the story is semi-autobiographical, but like...
Well, so it's not now, right? Like, this is 2002.
Okay, but that's pretty now.
This is based on a book written by Nico Walker, and he was put in jail for robbing banks. So that whole part is part of the story. He did go to the army, PTSD. I mean, of course, like all movies, you know, there is dramatization in it. But this lead character is more of a blank slate. So the main character, you never know his real name. He goes by Cherry. Like, right? Like, I don't think his real name is Cherry.
No,
he's just
they
referred
never
to
say
his.
See, that's the thing.
They never
about this
say
movie.
It.
I didn't even notice that they didn't say his name.
Yeah, I didn't either.
But they maybe referred to him once or something. But Cherry, I thought it was going to relate back to the military. Once he gets in action or whatever, they say, "Oh, you popped your cherry" or whatever. And I thought, "Oh, right. So." But or your frat? I don't know. But his
no, they
name
definitely
is,
said that in the military.
But they did. But then I looked back and I'm like, "Oh, his character name is Cherry." So I don't know what the deal with that is, but anyway, he's supposed to be more of a blank slate, and they didn't call him Nico. They didn't, you know, make it like this is a true story type of thing, but it is. And the guy wrote this biography, you know, his story while he was in jail, and I think it became a best-selling book and stuff. And so this is all rooted in reality, and you know, based on this guy's real story. But I mean, some of the stuff that they tell in it is like. It's overkill. Like, they don't really get to the point of, again, the drug stuff and the PTSD. Like, you see all the stuff he goes through, and so sure, you understand he's messed up, but I think based on all the media and all the things we know, like, you don't have to show us an hour of training in the military to have us understand he has PTSD. Like, it's now known enough.
I think this story would benefit from being smaller, not bigger.
Yes, this is way overblown because they hook you in the beginning. He's a bank robber, right?
Yeah.
But they take too long.
I was hooked in the beginning.
Oh, see, I was. Like, I was like, okay, like, we're telling this story where, like, he's kind of like the hapless bank robber who just like, he doesn't expect it to work, but it keeps working. I was like, okay, like, I can get behind, like, the loser who, like, falls into being a bank robber. But then when you get the rest of it, it's like,
I was instantly turned off by this movie.
Interesting. But I mean, even if you're, okay, and that's different then, but I was going to say, even if you aren't hooked, though, this is a high, you know, this is like what seems to be a clean-cut high school kid. We find out in the movie his parents come from money. They help them buy a house later on and stuff. But it's like, how did he become a bank robber? Like, to me, that is intriguing. I'm going to be, if you show me, like, this character, I'm going to want to know, why is Tom Holland robbing banks? Like, that, I think, is a good, in theory, that's a good hook in the beginning. But then they go on this huge journey that I didn't need to see all of it to understand that. I think it would have been, you know, if they could maybe show some flashbacks to the war.
That's what I was thinking. Know, just you, like, you have him wake up in a bed sweating from a flashback.
Sprinkle
right?
in
from
some
from
like,
a nightmare or
why
something.
Why does he have PTSD?
Like,
unveil the mystery over the movie.
I,
but like,
I don't need 45 minutes of him. You know, and if you want to make a war movie, I have no problem
with
that.
Then make the
war movie. I think there's a big open spot for that right now because that and like Westerns and war stuff, those go through phases at this point, right? Like you will get a bunch of them and then we won't get any for like 15 years. So I think there's a spot right now for a war movie. But getting a war short film in the middle of this movie
drug movie it's too unfocused, it's self-indulgent, it's up its own ass, and it is just way
do you,
too unfocused.
Okay, so do you think you could even make a drug movie anymore? And what I mean by that is we've seen Trainspotting, we've seen
Requiem
Like, to me,
yeah,
those
you can make. I mean, you can still make westerns, and we've seen
Spun.
The Searchers in Unforgiven.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I just
they
that's
still
true.
Make mob movies,
but like,
and we've
so
seen
like
Goodfellas
those,
and Godfather. I
those
mean,
movies you can tell different stories in them.
Yeah,
with drug people dealing with real addiction, I feel like there's nowhere else to go.
Let's. I think we should leave it at you can make any movie. The right person
that's fair.
With
that's
the right
fair.
Script
yeah.
can make any movie. Can you make a silent movie? Can you make a black and white movie? Yes, you can do all those things. You know what I mean? Like, you can't really say that because the sky's the limit. Creativity, people can make amazing movies that you would never think are successful, and that's why they become successful. Like, these huge hits are like, whoa, I've never seen anything like this, or you know what I mean? It's
sure,
so,
sure, sure.
You can, but this movie struggles to do it because it's too bloated and all those
I guess
reasons.
That's probably true. If you're going to do it, you got to do it right.
Well, and the other thing
or
is
make
too,
a good movie.
Yeah.
Well, that's true of anything.
Yeah.
Right. But talking about stylized and all that stuff, the other thing I didn't like, so he's the narrator, and it's a very bad narration because, you know, they don't, you. I think in a film, to make a good film, show us, don't tell us, right? A narrator should add something extra to the film. It should be adding additional information. But when he's narrating, like, hey, look, what you are seeing on the screen is someone trying to rob a bank or break a safe or we have drugs. You know what I mean? Like, it added nothing to the story. And then sometimes he would break the fourth wall, and I didn't like it. And I love movies that break the fourth wall in the right way.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I love it. It's Gary Shandling's show. Tom knows I'm addicted to that. The whole show is him breaking the fourth wall, and that's what makes it so unique and inventive. Like, I'm not against breaking fourth walls, but in this movie, sometimes he did it, sometimes he didn't, and it did not fit with the movie.
And there would be long phases where he didn't, and then when you do it again, you're like, oh, yeah,
whoa,
we're doing
we're
this.
Just, yeah, and it's like, why are we doing this? It's like you're narrating normally, then sometimes you just randomly turn and break the fourth wall, and then you go back into it. So as the viewer, you're confused a little bit just because you're like, okay, are we waiting for him to tell us something breaking the fourth wall again, or are we just watching his story? You know, it messed up the tone of the film, because again, I think it's like one of those things where they're like, oh, break the fourth wall, it's artistic, like we can do something screwy with this. And I feel like they threw everything at the wall with like, how can we make this movie so artful, you know? And it dragged it down.
So we've talked about actors kind of having kind of like a blank check, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where Daniel Radcliffe or Elijah Wood mm-hmm. can kind of do whatever they want at this point,
sure.
right? Like, they've got so much money from these two multi-billion-dollar franchises that they can do weird little horror movies.
They don't need the work. Yeah. So
they don't
can,
need the work.
I think it's a little different. Blank check is when you've done something so great and made so much money, they will give you money to make your art project.
Yes.
These people... that don't need money that you're mentioning can go and do something and take no money because they don't need
right.
it.
That's
so it's
true.
A little
That's
bit
fair.
Different. They can do no budget movies because they don't need it.
Do you think the Russos, not the Russos in general, but do you think a director can do, I guess not blank check, but do you think they can do what Elijah Wood and Daniel Radcliffe can do? Like, do you think there are directors that have made so much money that they can just do whatever they want and Hollywood will let them do whatever they want?
I think they can, but they'll get $300 million to do it. Like, once you make the biggest movie of all time financially, like, you're trusted for at least a little bit, for a couple movies, right?
Sure.
And if there's no returns, it's different. But
yeah, but with Russo's, I think it's a little different because they didn't create that movie out of whole cloth, right? Like, they were given
bits and pieces.
They certainly steered the ship in the right direction and did an amazing job, and I don't mean to take that away from them at all, but let's not, like, they invented Iron Man and they wrote this
right.
story, like, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and they stepped into a franchise that was already well established. They just continued to make it good.
They were playing with someone else's toys.
Right, and so that's a far cry from when, you know, James Cameron makes Titanic or George Lucas makes Star Wars,
or
right?
Quentin Tarantino. I mean, he writes most, you know, everything except for Jackie Brown.
Yeah, and I think it's also harder. I mean, there are certainly times when a director kind of has that window of opportunity where nobody's going to say no to anything that comes out of his or her mouth, although historically I think it's always been a his. But I also think it's more difficult because you're talking, like, it's a lot easier for an actor to go, I've got $200 million. I can live off the interest. I'm good. But when you're making a movie, you're still playing with somebody else's money.
Sure.
So you still have to convince them. The only kind of example that pops to my head of a director that has kind of married those two things is Mel Gibson.
okay, so I think Mel, I think Mel Gibson is a little bit different because he got himself. He is a little bit different, but he also got himself into some trouble, right?
Like, sure, but before he got in trouble, I mean, he went and was like, I'm going to make a 2-hour movie in a dead language about Jesus. And they said no.
Did he do that before he got in trouble? Or was that after he got?
Okay. Well, I'm pretty sure that was before.
Okay. Okay.
And, I think so.
And you know, everybody was like, you're insane. And but he had the money and he was like, I'm just going to do it anyway. And then he made a ton of money.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true.
And then he did
that's
it again with Apocalypto.
Yeah. And then I was
which wasn't the same level of hit, but he could still had the juice and the money.
Yeah.
And I said juice.
Yeah.
We're talking about Mel Gibson, so I need to clarify.
No, it's fair. It's fair. Yeah, I get it. I get it.
You know, but to get this other weird movie made that no studio would have touched under normal circumstances.
Totally. It's just, it's interesting, and I can see it. Like, you don't want to, nobody in their career wants to be pigeonholed. I mean, especially in an artistic career, right? You don't want to be
early,
just.
And early in their career. Yeah. And everybody involved in this career. Tom Holland's only got what? Fall 4 or 5 movies under his probably more than that.
He's got more. Tom Holland, Tom Holland's a very good actor, and I think he does a good job with the material. If Tom Holland was not in this movie, it would have been like
real
borderline
bad.
Unwatchable, right? Like, Tom Holland, for what it's worth, his performance is fine. It's just the material is not that strong and the story's way unfocused. But the directors don't want to get pigeonholed being the superhero guys. They're really, really good at it. But as directors, as artists, they want to tell stories that are more, you know, human and personal. They're not always going to try to tell a Greek myth or a superhero type thing. So I can see why they'd want to go the opposite direction. But sometimes when you are doing that knee-jerk reaction to something, you go way overboard. And I think this is the direct reaction to, we're not just superhero guys. Look at this that we can do. And it's like, crazy. They should have been, I mean, this story in 1.5 hours, cut out the army stuff, could have been a pretty compelling, interesting bank robber heist type movie. You see why, you flashback to why he's got the PTSD, and then focus on why this opioid pandemic is there, you know, and the healthcare system and all that. But like, I'm not gonna buy like, oh, the banks charged me some overdraft fees, I better rob them. That's not a reasonable
you're robbing the banks because you screwed over your drug dealer. Like,
yeah,
that's, and you know what? It's tough. Like, I think there is kind of a, I'm hesitant to use the word funny, but I think there is a comedic movie here a little bit. Like, they try to drop some comedy in here. It's a really tight line to walk, right? Because dealing with addiction, is super triggering for a lot of people. And when you try to like throw a comedy spin on it, like that could look as like you're not taking it seriously. You're making a joke out of millions of people's
struggle. You could also, like, if you're going to make this edgy movie, I mean, this is kind of going back to Pain and Gain. I think the way you do that is if you want to have, you can have it be funny in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then at some point it shifts and it's not funny anymore.
Right.
Because I mean, let's face it, drugs are fun. Like, if they weren't fun, people wouldn't do them. Right, like if you took drugs and you immediately became a heroin addict out there blowing dudes for money, like you would never do it. But that's not how it starts, right? If it started like that, you wouldn't do it unless you just like blowing dudes. I mean, I don't care, but
you do you.
You don't need the heroin
that. You need the heroin for that,
or you do this dude, but don't do it because you need money for heroin, right?
Yeah.
And so I mean, they are fun. That's the problem. Right?
But that's the tone of the movie, right? So, like,
Trainspotting,
funny. There's lots of humor in Trainspotting, and people are like ODing and running from cops and stuff. And like, you can have a movie that deals with serious subjects or like pressing subjects. You know, and I think even Requiem for a Dream has like lighthearted, not towards the end certainly, but like in the beginning, it's all fun and games as there's pawning TVs and all that. And you know, there's some funny moments there. You have Marlon Wayans, who I think
it's a funny story when it's not your TV.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and so you can do it, but the problem is this movie, again, that's the tonal imbalance of it. They try to do this artsy thing with all these stylized things, and then they try to tell this really important story about PTSD and mental health and drug addiction, but then they don't really ever focus on those things because there's so much going on. And then if you're trying to be serious like that, sometimes the humor, if not done right, can take it out of it. And these people clearly know humor, Community, Arrested Development. You know,
there's funny stuff.
I won't mention Yumi and Dupree.
But I mean, like the Avengers have comedic beats in them.
Sure. Absolutely,
yeah, they know humor.
Right.
The MCU movies have some very, very funny moments.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But this movie doesn't. It's just doesn't have the right tone for that, and so I don't ever remember really laughing during this movie.
I feel like there's one scene that kind of sums up this movie.
Okay.
And it's when he's working at the restaurant and the owner like introduces him to his like cousin that just got out of jail that keeps talking about, but do you have the courage to blow a head, put a gun to a guy's head and blow his brains out?
Oh, right.
He says it like five times.
Yeah. I forgot about that guy. The drunk guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like a 5 minute scene and he's at the bar and he's telling the story. He keeps saying, and he's talking about how he's going to join the army. And the guy's like, but do you have the courage to do this? And then he's like, oh, well, I got to go home. You're too drunk. I'll take you home. What? No, maybe. And then he drove me home and blah, blah, blah. And then that scene ends. Do you remember how that scene ends?
Does it end with him, like, smashing the...
It ends with Tom Holland saying, and I never saw him again. Why are we wasting time with this stupid son of a bitch that added nothing to the story and you will never see him again?
That's a good point.
Because they thought he was imparting some kind of wisdom to
like,
the character.
What the hell?
And that's how they delivered it. But yes, that does feel like a lot of this movie. Like, why are we putting all this, like the training stuff in? Again, we know the army's hard. We know that they're trying to toughen you up. Like, when you're out there and you know, bullets are whizzing by your head and a guy just got shot and you got to drag him off the battlefield, you can't be a sissy. Like, yeah, they're trying to toughen you up. But we know that. You don't need to show us 45 minutes of him in his underwear, duck walking around, crawling through barbed wire thing. Like, dude. We've seen that in a million movies.
If you're gonna show that, then you need to show us something new because we've seen it, right?
Yeah, like, right. You're doing a redux of a much better movie,
and he's fine in those scenes. It looks like Tom Holland's going through the crap, and it's hard and all that. But like, what did that add to? If you told me this guy was a drug addict and he had PTSD, and we flash back to a few traumatic moments in the army, boom, it's done.
I get it?
Like,
totally.
Yeah, you can tell. You can say my best friend was blown up in front of me.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's okay, done.
He can see his friend in one dream sequence and watch it happen. Boom, done. Like, so I just think the way that they, you know, clearly they were given a lot of, you know, well, it says $40 million on Wikipedia, but this movie looks a lot bigger with the army.
It's a great looking movie
for
$40 million.
I mean, okay, if this is only $40 million, I'm not saying anything
this
about the writing.
Amazing. No, I'm just
not the writing or anything, but holy crap. If they did this truly for $40 million, that's amazing, first of all. But
was this directly to Apple, or did Apple pick this up?
No, I think this... I think
it got picked up.
Was it picked up? Oh, I thought it was an Apple.
Yeah, they acquired
distribution
rights to the film in September 2020for around $40 million. So, they basically covered the production cost of the film, and then it got released theatrically in February.
So Apple paid $40 million. This movie probably cost about
That's what I'm wondering. I wonder if the production budget was really 40 or if this number's from them buying it, because I can't imagine this is 40. I think this is like, we're in a pandemic. We spent $120 million on this movie and it's making zero. And I think Apple said, I'll pay you 40. I don't think this budget's 40. I really don't. Yeah. Not with the stars and the directors and the going to war and all. I mean, that's a lot of...
How much do you think Tom Holland garners, though?
I bet
I just mean that, like, in
I bet
general,
he's like a
much...
5 million starting
but
player.
But this also
point.
Feels the kind of movie that he'd take a pay cut for.
No, he could have. He totally could have. But I'm just saying, though, you got the Russos, two of the biggest directors out there right now. You have Tom Holland, a huge star.
I just don't know. I don't know what actors get at the moment. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's like, I don't feel like Tom Holland opens a movie. He opens a Spider-Man movie. But he doesn't.
I think he's pretty much like this modern day. I mean, he's... I know it's weird to say, but I think he is a Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise of his time. I think with
really,
I think he could be, but I'm just saying. Thus far, name a hit movie with Tom Holland that's not Spider-Man.
No, but I just think that because you know how superhero movies are, like, you know, it's the same thing that Spielberg and Scorsese rail against and all that. It's like Spider-Man, the character, and these superhero movies are the biggest things that happen in pop culture right now. And I feel like he's a freaking rock star, and all he has to do is be Spider-Man. Like, he is Spider-Man.
And no, he's great in Spider-Man. Yeah, totally. I'm not saying he's not. Yeah. I just don't know that people are like, I got to see the new Tom Holland movie.
Well, I agree. Like, that's
when Spider-Man's over and he has to figure out a way to where Daniel Radcliffe kind of got pigeonholed is because they made so many of those movies so fast. Because
they had to.
They had to, right? They didn't have a choice.
The clock, but he never got all pigeonholed. He didn't let himself get pigeonholed.
Well, what I mean is, like, that's all he did for, what,
a decade?
15 years?
But it's not all he did. That's what I'm saying. He was doing Broadway.
But he didn't do anything
stuff.
In between stuff. Was he doing things? What I'm saying is, Radcliffe, for 15 years of his life, was basically Harry Potter, filming a Harry Potter movie, where Tom Holland does not have that.
Yeah.
There's enough breaks for Tom Holland, sure, where he can do Spider-Man, do the Avengers, take a little bit of a break, do something in there. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not.
And Holland has the advantage. All these MCU guys have the advantage of, like, they can play these characters without committing to a 9-month shoot of a major motion picture, right? Like, he can make a Spider-Man movie and they need him every day, but
right,
he can also make an Endgame and he can be there for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And
sure,
then
sure,
go on to do something else. And then he was still out there in a high profile way as Spider-Man, but he didn't have to carry an entire movie.
Yeah. Right.
But
right,
I think that's what the problem we're getting to is, I think he is a rock star, and I think that he's in demand, and he is making a ton of movies right now, and he doesn't make those type of movies if they didn't think he was bankable. But will people show up? Chaos Walking is terrible. The one with Daisy Ridley?
Oh, yeah.
Is
he's
terrible.
Doing Uncharted, too, right? Uncharted
he,
as
he's
well.
He's doing Uncharted with Mark Wahlberg. He did Chaos Walking, which was with Daisy Ridley. He did the Devil All the Time, which I thought was another
excellent.
That was
excellent, good. That
was a good, yeah, role of his. But see, he's working consistently. Like, they are
sure,
giving
sure,
him
sure,
a lot of projects, and they're trying to make it a thing. But he's got to be in the right projects. If he keeps doing movies like this and Chaos Walking, which, you know, they want to be big hits. And, like, Chaos Walking is a book series. It's another one of those YA, like, let's get three more of these type of things going. But, you know,
was that
those,
released?
I think it's out now.
Okay.
Yeah, and theaters. It's a theatrical thing.
Well, so it doesn't count.
Didn't do very much, but...
Well, nothing does.
But anyway, so, yeah, I think Tom Holland is not the problem here, though. We can all agree. He's a very good
actor. Yeah, absolutely.
Actor,
oh, absolutely.
But,
yeah,
only time will tell if he keeps taking projects that are, you know, lackluster, and just depends. You know, he's got to do some more big ones. Like, if Uncharted's a huge hit, that could be gigantic for, you know, him and being an A-lister and all that. But so I think we should just skip over. He goes through war. He loses his friend. I mean, all this, it's like, this is an hour and a half into the movie now. He comes home.
Right, he comes home and he's got his wife and they've got this house and he just can't get ahead, right? Like, the bank is screwing him on overdraft fees.
I mean, that is such a that big freaking.
I agree,
like,
with you.
I get it.
I agree,
and that's
you,
a real thing, and I hate them and all that. But, like, his life didn't go downhill because of the overdraft fees.
Yeah.
So, like, big whoop.
And I don't think that the movie's trying to get you to say, like, this is his motivation for robbing banks. I feel like it's in there to get you to be like, yeah, banks suck. Who cares?
Yeah, that's
if they
the
rob
sympathy.
Them?
Yeah,
and,
totally.
But at the same time, it's like, it's not the bank he's putting a gun's face in. It's some poor lady who's making $9 an hour.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, he gets a construction job with another buddy of his who also went to the military, and he's a mess. Like, he comes back and he's a mess. So, and it looks like he's further along in his mess than Tom Holland at this point. So he's drinking all the time. He jumps out of a car, a moving car. And so Tom Holland starts to abuse Xanax.
He has major PTSD, you know, and this is what the movie's trying to say, although they felt they had to show us every single step of his journey. But, like, we get what he went through, and they're saying, like, this guy's messed up. And what the point they're making is, again, the government, there's not enough assistance for veterans, the medical system's messed up. Like, he needed help when he came back from putting his life on the line and dragging dead bodies out of the line of fire. Like, he needed help. And so they're showing us the aftermath of that. And so that's really the point they're trying to hammer home, but they never really, they don't focus on what the government could be doing more. You know what I mean? They don't really dive into it. They're just showing you that he didn't have the help he needed, you know? And I feel like maybe they could have went after the actual cause of these issues a little more.
Now you're talking real world. Like, that's, you know, like, so he goes to see a psychiatrist, and what's the first thing the psychiatrist prescribes him? Oxycontin, like, for PTSD. And it's like, well, that's it. Like, once you get that prescribed, which is, I mean, I'll be honest, like, every time I've been hurt or I've had surgery, that's the first thing they prescribe me as a painkiller. And if you aren't careful, and anybody who has an addictive personality, you get one taste of that and you're like, oh, shit, like, that's the good stuff.
And that's not going to cure.
Then you fall down this. No, it's not a cure.
Because
it's not.
But see, his problem, his PTSD can't be cured by a pill. You know? I mean, sure, if he had the right prescription, and I'm not a doctor, but if you have the right prescription.
Did you play one on the podcast? I get it.
Yes, exactly. And, yeah. And Doogie web browser. And
Doogie
so,
web browser.
So if, yeah, because I have, what is it, WebMD?
WebMD, yeah. It
so,
tells me everything.
So of course you can prescribe medicine that will help you with things, but you need psychology. He needs to be going to a therapist constantly. He needs to get rid of all these things that he's waking up in a cold sweat from these nightmares about his best friend dying and smelling their charred bodies and all this stuff that we end up seeing, which again, that stuff is effective. It was just too much of the time spent on it. But you know, he's taking these drugs and he's going to take one, feel better for a little bit, and then it's going to wear off. What's he going to do?
Right.
More drugs, more. He's never solving the problem, right? He's treating the symptoms, not the cause.
Correct. Yes, he's treating the symptoms, not the cause.
Take it. I feel bad again. I need more drugs. And so he goes in a downward spiral, and eventually he doesn't have the money to...
Well, eventually he drags his wife down with him. Like, his wife is so fed up, and, you know, rather than leaving him, which apparently they're in this... just this toxic relationship where she can't leave and he won't let her leave. She starts doing the drugs too.
But you're right, though. Going back to your point earlier, when it comes to the wife, he is an asshole. Like, I mean, and again, he has issues. But what I'm saying is, like, the fact that she stayed with him is incredible. Like, that's true love, you know, not leaving and trying to help the person you love.
Is it love? Is that true love?
It's not I think. Well, no, I mean, she could just leave because it's hard.
True love is her leaving.
Yeah, I don't know that the love is what was making her stay. I think it was a whole host of other issues. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't think she cared about him. She didn't want to just leave him to die in his drug-induced coma.
I just don't know that we should define love as sticking with someone treating you like that.
There comes a point, and Tom, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I think you might know this world more than me. There comes a point where you have to leave.
Yeah, like
you cannot help them no matter how much you love them.
Yeah, if they're not going to help themselves, then there's only so much you can do, and you have to leave or have them escorted from the house by the local police.
Sure.
Hypothetically.
Sure. No, good point. Maybe I misspoke. My whole point is, though, the going didn't get tough, and she just left. She loved him, and she stuck by him, and he treated her like crap. And so
I think the people that you see that survive this life have a good support system.
Yes, if she left, he'd be dead.
I think the point I'm trying to make is a little bit more nuanced. I'm not saying that she didn't love him.
Yeah.
I'm saying I don't think it's her love of him that kept her there. I think her staying while he's treating her like that is a character flaw that's indicative of other issues that are wrong with her.
Sure.
It's not
codependency.
It's not proof of love that she stayed and tolerated that.
Right.
That behavior.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because that's a dangerous message to send to our tens of listeners.
and I don't think anyone is picking that up from what I'm saying. I do think she cared about him, and
she did.
She didn't want to see him. Yeah. She didn't want to see him die by overdosing. And so she stuck with him, even though he acted, you know, treated her like crap, and she tried to get him the help he needed. And eventually he pulls her into his mess, cause like he can't get clean. And, you know,
she just joins him.
She joins him in this
pit of badness.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, he has to set an alarm on his phone to take a dose to her at her job. So she doesn't start getting dope sick.
Yeah. And now this part, see, this is, I think, on the back half to last third is interesting, and they should have got there way faster. But like this stuff, because it is real, like to see what people go through that are that dependent on drugs, that she's going to school and she has to like take a bathroom break, quote unquote, or whatever, and leave and go shoot up in the middle or else she'll get sick and
she'll get dope sick. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that drives the point home of like how terrible it is to be addicted to drugs. Like this stuff I think was really good. I think it was effective the way they presented it. You know, I just think that they should have chosen, you know, a focus of their movie. But yeah, so they both get into it and like, they don't have money. Like this stuff's getting expensive, right? Like they don't make enough money. They can't pay for all these drugs. And so he eventually, what he meets up with Pills and Coke is the guy that like, he's the drug dealer that, you know, he ends up getting all his stuff from.
Yeah.
And so he's meeting with this guy and this guy's like, I can't front you any more money and all this. They're not paying their debts for these drugs and all that. And then what does he say? He says, I can help, like, keep this safe for me.
Keep this safe for me. Which, again, if you're entrusting a drug addict with a safe, you're a bad drug dealer.
And this is like the comical stuff, though, right?
Yes. Like, oh, totally, totally. This is this whole scene where they take the safe and they're trying to get it open. I do love the scene where his buddy's like, "Oh, he worked for a locksmith. And he's got his ear to the safe, and he's turned the lock, and he's like, no, I have no idea what I'm doing. I can't help you."
Like, I liked this part. Again, I wish we would have just skipped the war stuff, gotten glimpses of it, and if we got into a movie that was this, which is more like Trainspotting-esque or whatever, which is more like silly and like, look at these drug addicts doing all this stuff that's it's so ridiculous, pulling the safe with a truck, throwing it off the roof of a house. Like, I don't know. I enjoyed those antics, but you're right. It's like, this guy knew it was in the safe. They didn't know. You know, they thought maybe there was just a few bags of weed or whatever in there.
Well, no, the gal does go, she's like, you have a drug dealer's safe. Like, that's where the good stuff is.
Right, but they don't know that. I'm just saying they're just trying to get, like, a few whatevers in there. And, like, he knows what's in there. He entrusted these people because he is not thinking that they're going to go, like, they're not going to mess with all this. But they bust this thing open eventually, and it is, like, it's insane. The safe is packed with probably hundreds of thousands of dollars of drugs that this drug dealer is supposed to distribute. And now these junkies have access to all of them, and they go through this bender of just like doing all these drugs. And then the next day, what happens? This guy comes to get his drugs.
Yeah, no.
And he thinks it's funny. Now, I do think partially this is on him, which of course he would never think it amount to this. But you don't go to a bunch of drug addicts who are going to be scared of the police and then do a joke of open up, it's the police.
Yeah, like, right.
I get frustrated with this movie being semi-autobiographical because it, like, there are so many things in this movie that I'm just like, that doesn't make any sense. And I don't know if it's true and it actually happened that way, or if it's just lazy screenwriting. But like this moment feels really stupid.
It is really stupid because what a dumb thing. Like, you know, if you think you know how drug addicts work, this guy's a drug dealer. Like, you don't even mess around with that. Because, of course, if the cops are there, of course they're going to go try to flush all the stuff.
Yeah.
Are you stupid? They think the cops are there and they have a safe full of drugs. So it's horrible. And you do feel bad for them, aside from the stupid situation. But they flush these 200,000 or whatever crazy amount of drugs they're there. And then he's like, hey, I'm here for the safe. And they have nothing at this point. And so he, of course, gets them from someone else. He's, you know, he's just a middleman. And
right.
So now they're all dead if they don't figure this out. And so they get into robbing banks to pay for, you know, like, seriously go on a spree to try
and
to get the money.
That's what the next 30 to 95,000 minutes are. Is him robbing banks in kind of a comical manner, like he, like you said, like the thing from Zombieland where he's like giving you tips on how to rob a bank and like looking directly at the camera.
It didn't work here though.
I agree, it didn't work. So robbing these banks and finally,
Two hours and 15 minutes later, we go to the opening of the movie where he goes in the bank and then it's like the angels shine light down upon this bank teller or whatever. Like, you know, the very last one we finally, because I'm like, is he in love with her? Like, I did not understand the opening, right? Because he's like, I saw her and she was there or whatever. And I'm like, is this how he meets the love of his life? It was so confusing.
I still don't get what was supposed to be so revelatory about her.
He had hit rock bottom. And this, like, the way I interpret it at this point is, like, he knew that this is my last one. I cannot keep living this life. I cannot keep doing this. My wife has already been put into, like, OD'd in a hospital. So she's, like, out of the movie at this point.
Oh, yeah, that's tough. And the parents are just like,
it is. And I like the mom where she's like, either you leave her, I'm going to kick your fucking ass.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's not the dad. Like, that's the mom. And I was like,
and it's true.
Probably
it's like,
do that.
He did do this to her. And,
He brought her into this life.
And that's when she comes out of the hospital in rehab, and then he's like, leave, and she's like, I'm not going to. Like,
and then she gets high again.
And then they get into it,
right. So he goes to rob. I took that as like he knew this was his last chance. So
but why
like,
did they focus on that teller so much? All that teller is the same teller as everybody else, except for her. He's like, sound the alarm. They were trying
because
to make
I
it
think,
like, oh, it's an epiphany. Like, she's
yes,
the last
that's,
one.
Yes.
But
not this teller in general. Like, that teller could have been anybody.
Of course.
But this one teller was going to be the one that could help him.
Why open the movie like she is
I agree with you.
next coming of Christ that he found at this bank when it's just like they opened it with basically his last job and then we see all this stuff and he gets there. Like, I don't know. I thought that was stupid. Let's just put it simply.
I got to tell you, this movie should have ended here. this is where it should have ended.
Oh, that ending is pretty okay. Okay,
right, so he gets this ending right now. So he walks away. He's walking. He sees all the cops show up. He's walking down the street. He fires
in
his gun
20-minute
three times.
Tracking shot, right?
So stupid.
Artistic, right? Let's track him all the way, hopping a fence and down a thing, and taking his socks off and shooting up in the street. And the cops are in the background. It takes him 10 more minutes to come to.
Yeah, like, this is how it should have ended.
Well,
if you're going to do this movie, it ends with him shooting up.
But this is the real guy's story, right? So
I guess
Nico Walker,
that's
I mean, the whole point is his redemption from all this. And he is better now. And he's a best-selling author and all that. So Tom Holland goes to jail. And they just show him in jail doing his classes.
Detoxing.
Writing and all this stuff, right? 6 years later. Okay. Tom Holland is 24. He looks like he's about 16, right? So this guy at this point, he's been to college. He's been to war. 6 years have passed, whatever. He's probably supposed to be in his 30s. They're like, let's make Tom Holland old, asterisk.
Put a mustache
asterisk
on him.
Impossible. Let's make Tom Holland old and aged. Hey, look, it's 16-year-old looking Tom Holland with a mustache. That was the most
ridiculous.
Yeah, it
looked like he was in a high school play.
That was the most ridiculous aging I have ever seen, and these filmmakers should have had a better way of aging him than putting a funny mustache on him. Like, that was just, no. I mean,
it should have been like a twirly one.
Just give him some makeup,
some
prosthetics though to make him look old, some wrinkles. Like he looked like a kid.
If you can make
mustache.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt look like a young Bruce Willis, you can make Tom Holland look old.
So I thought that was I think I laughed out loud. I'm like, are you serious? It's him looking the same with a mustache.
He just slicked his hair back.
Oh, he's old
and a mustache.
Yeah, so
he's an old man.
But
now.
He gets out of jail and there's no words. It's like, oh no, the prison guard.
He sees
is like,
it. He sees it. He thinks he's alone, and then in the background, like behind him, a car door opens and there's his wife.
Yeah, and she looks at him and they smile or whatever, and then it ends.
Like, let's not put these two back together.
What a horrible ending to a movie.
Yeah.
First off, it's like, it just feels so misguided. Like, there's nothing about that is a happy ending to me. I'm like, anybody that knows anything about addiction is like, you're not supposed to get back with the person that you got addicted with. Like,
you got to get away from that whole
part of
your life.
It just starts a cycle all over again. And I'm like, so I'm supposed to be happy that this girl put her life on hold for what, 15 years? Like,
this guy only got 6 years for robbing
maybe I'm conflating with something
I think you are, because I thought it said he went to jail from 2007 to 2000 and he gets out in 2021.
Oh, it was that long?
Oh, he just got out?
So Tom Holland's supposed to be like 45 with the mustache then? Okay, because okay, maybe that's... I'm thinking it's been a month since I've seen it, but at the time I probably knew it. I was like, whoa.
So he got out this year?
Not in real life. That's just how they structure the film.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay, so she waited that long, which I'm not trying to say against waiting for people or whatever, but they had a screwed up situation and like... I don't know, but the hap.
This
like,
is
I,
not the person you wait for. This is not like, and I'm not saying he can't come out and be a good person, but this is not.
You don't get to have that relationship.
This is not the person you wait for, and she's not. She shouldn't be waiting for him. So like, that's not a happy ending. All I saw was somebody who wasted the prime of her life waiting for this guy who might come out and fall right back into these patterns. People do it all the time, and like, it sounds like in real life this guy hasn't. So good for him. Like, I'm not trying to begrudge him that, but that is not. That's not something you want to bank or build a life around. Like, that's not.
No, but it since this, I mean, okay, I'm of two minds of this, but I think to give credit to the guy that wrote the story this is adapted from, his is a happy ending. So I think you do have to show that he is clean and got a second chance at life. And he was a good person before he got all into this. I mean, he was just a punk kid, but like, I don't think Cherry was a bad person. So he went through a lot of crap. He cleaned up his life. And based on the real life, Nico Walker, it's like, yeah, he now has his second chance. So like, I do think they kind of have to end it like that. But I do believe the girlfriend wife is a dramatization and they made that up. And so that's where the problem came. He didn't have a wife that waited for him and stuff. I'm pretty positive. I'll look into that. But
well, he's married to like a poet now, like Rachel Rabbit White.
Okay. So I don't think that relationship, I think that was all dramatized for this story. And so they're kind of making up that this girl waited for him and now they're back together. So you're mixing the real story of him getting clean and writing the book and getting out of jail with this whole through line of high school or college girlfriend to, you know, drugs and overdosing and waiting and all that. So, you know, I agree, like the message they're sending is a little messed up, but it's like, I don't think you can even say like, oh, well, people relapse, like this guy isn't the guy that you wait for, because like he did get better. So, you know what I mean? It's a confusing cross between the two.
Yeah, I just, but I mean, I don't know. I think if you're going to make this movie, you need to know how addiction works.
Yeah.
And she's not there. Like, you don't get to have, like, your happy ending is you got out of jail alive.
Like, right. That, like, that's I think ending. A better ending is him getting out of jail and kind of, like, you see him starting to rebuild. And
yeah.
Instead yeah. Of like.
Going and, right back to the marriage that.
Yeah. And the pretty girl waited the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. They tried to do that storybook cliched. Yeah. You know, just, yeah. It and, didn't and work.
It wasn't earned either.
It, like, that's what I mean.
No, it was not earned. At all.
Because even before drugs, this relationship was kind of rocky, like the whole scene in the bar where she shows up with the guy from Ghana. And like,
okay, see, I liked that scene.
I'm not saying I didn't like the scene. I'm saying that, like, but it's not like they had this storybook romance until war and drugs took over.
Can I tell you, like, that I have had that exact experience with a girlfriend?
Are you serious?
Exactly the same. So I worked at a Blockbuster, right? No lies out of school. Dated this girl from high school about till like 2005, 2006. She knows where I work, right? So I'm working behind the counter one night, and who walks in the door with her new boyfriend but this girl? And it's like, I turn, because, you know, we're supposed to say, hi, welcome to Blockbuster. I'm a douchebag.
Yeah.
I turn and look.
At least you were honest.
You know, it's one of my, whatever. Yeah. I turn and look. And I just stop. And it's like, are you kidding? Like, you know where I work.
Of all the Blockbusters, you had to walk into my Blockbuster.
And I
got to
tell you, there weren't many left at that point. So,
well,
you know.
that's maybe why she showed up.
Then you go somewhere else. You go to, actually, you can't go to any, it doesn't matter. But.
But were you guys that serious? Were you getting
Like, we were engaged.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay.
Like,
that's what I want to clarify.
We were very serious. And like,
because this is weird. She doesn't like break up with him because they have a bad breakup. She's like, I have to go to school. I love you or whatever. Or I care about you, but like, I need to go do this and all that. And then she shows up with a guy. Like, that was such
walked
a crappy.
Into my job. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't think it was that big of a deal. Verbatim. That's verbatim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. True story. So, actually happened.
But. Yeah, they were, I mean, yeah, they both did crappy things throughout the movie.
I was dating Leanne at the time. Like, we had just started dating, and I was like, you're never going to believe what just happened.
Well, but you had moved on, so you can't really care that much at that point.
Bull.
Maybe you still care?
I mean, I cared enough that my ex-girlfriend brought her new boyfriend in to show him off at work.
Yeah, I get it. It's
it feels very performative.
Yes.
I could see how someone could calculate it, make a calculated move, but...
Like, it's not like you're in the grocery store and she's in the grocery store.
You came to my job.
You came to, that's
right.
True. No.
Yeah.
But.
That's what Hollywood did.
Right. Well, yeah. If it existed
for you
at
now.
The time.
Yeah, right.
You go to Hollywood.
But, this was a mess.
Or Family Video.
This was.
That was still around.
Yeah. This was a bloated.
This was.
Self-indulgent mess, unfocused mess. And it's a shame. Like, Tom Holland, really good actor. And I mean, I thought the girlfriend, Sierra Bravo, did they hire her because she had a military name?
Yeah, they're like,
her name's Sierra Bravo.
We have to hire her. Hire her now.
But yeah, I mean, she was fine too. It's just the material was lacking. And at the end of the day, I didn't care about any of them as they tried to make you do for 2.5 hours. And that's where it ultimately fails.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you the last time I was this impatient with a film. I was mad that I had to keep
and you've got a 4-hour movie coming up soon, so I hope you like those
characters. Buddy, well, we do, just not in this universe.
Well, I know, I hope you like these specific characters, because 4 hours, Tom, almost double this.
We got the Snyder Cut next week.
It's 4 hours.
Cool. So anyway, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Kevin, and you can follow me on Twitter at Kevin R Brackett.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS 21.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, facebook.com/Real Spoilers. And don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/Real Spoilers, where for $5 a month you get all sorts of bonus content and you help us out. And we like you a little extra. So that's it for this week. Apparently next time we're doing the Snyder Cut. Jesus Christ. And until then, Sam killed Joe.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned ya. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.